On a Monday, you're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the season for lookbacks and reflections, and the same goes for politics. WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson is here to catch us up on what lawmakers are working on heading into the holidays. Revamped Foxconn deal, the future of mental health funding, purging voter rolls. It is time to reflect and look back with you at 800-642-1234. How would you negotiate with Foxconn at this point? What were state lawmakers' greatest accomplishments this year? Where did you see bipartisan spirit? Where did you see the breakdown, the greatest division? And what do you hope for in state politics in 2020? Join in 800-642-1234. Tweet us WPR Mornings. And WPR's Sean Johnson is here. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Kate.
So before we get to our state capitol, let's spend a moment on Capitol Hill and what you saw with the House's impeachment inquiry. What stood out to you in the response from Wisconsin House members?
Yeah, just watching the debate on C-SPAN, I think what stands out is how very, you know, far apart Republicans and Democrats are on this issue. When you listen to the debate, there's not like a gray area where they kind of come together over the charges of impeachment. So just the partisanship of the debate. And if also, I mean, if you listen to the debate at all on impeachment, these lawmakers are given like sometimes 30 seconds or a minute and a half to make their point. And so you would hear really kind of the same points over and over and over again, because for each of these lawmakers, sure, this point's been made before, but this is their chance to get up and make a speech on, you know, this historic vote. And so you heard some of the same points from Democrats and Republicans kind of on a loop for, you know, hours on end.
Well, the second longest serving member of the House, Jim Sensenbrenner, had an opinion piece in The New York Times on Friday about why he voted against impeachment. And he drew a bunch of contrasts to 21 years ago when he had cast his votes to impeach President Clinton. Here he is on the House floor last week.
This is about a perfect storm, months of activity directly ordered by the president to his senior cabinet and political appointees, an orchestrated plan demanding a foreign power interfere in our democracy.
Okay, so that I'm not sure if that is...
That is Mark Pocan.
Yeah, that's Mark Pocan there. I'm so sorry about that. But going back to Representative Sensenbrenner, what did he see in this impeachment proceeding in a very different light?
So this is the point that he made that I think was one of the major refrains of the day for Republicans. He said that this is a quote from his speech. At no time is there any evidence that indicates that Donald J. Trump violated any criminal statute of the United States. So that was his point, was that what we were talking about here with these articles of impeachment against President Trump are not actual crime. So, you know, obstruction of Congress, Representative Sensenbrenner is saying that is not a criminal statute. You know, abuse of power, not a criminal statute. Whereas when you go back to the Clinton impeachment, they had articles of impeachment accusing Clinton of perjury and of tampering with witnesses. So that's the distinction that Representative Sensenbrenner is drawing there in his remarks. He was one of our delegation who's been there for both of them.
Talking with Sean Johnson, WPR's State Capitol Bureau Chief, how do you think the state should handle Foxconn's subsidies? Have you considered working for Foxconn? What options do you see? And do you think there is a tech workforce at the ready in southeastern Wisconsin? Join in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Sean, let's turn to our capital now. Governor Evers said Thursday that he thinks the $3 billion incentive package with Foxconn will be renegotiated. You sat down with the governor for a year-end conversation, and here's one moment.
All the terms of that contract are based upon something that's not happening. And it's not rational thinking, and I think they agreed with me at that point in time that we need to change what it says, because what it says is not happening. And so let's do it. I mean, it's not rocket science.
What is the governor saying there in terms of the status of Foxconn in Wisconsin?
So a lot of the latest discussion over Foxconn boils down to a disagreement between the state and Foxconn over whether Foxconn is in violation of its original contract, which it reached with the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation under the leadership of, former Governor Scott Walker under a Republican legislature. And what it boils down to is that original contract calls for Foxconn to build Generation 10.5 LCD plant. So this is a term that I had never heard of until, a year or so ago, just because of covering Foxconn. But when you're talking Gen 10.5, you're talking about giant TV screens, basically the largest, most technologically advanced screens. And this is what Foxconn said it was going to build. So when you heard this, the pitch for Foxconn originally, that it was going to be a plant that was the size of 11 Lambeau Fields and, build the biggest screens in the world, that's what they're talking about. They are definitely not going to build Generation 10.5 screens in Wisconsin because they can't get glass there for screens that big. It's just not going to happen. And so Foxconn's plans are changing. They are different than what's in that contract. So what the Evers administration is saying is we need to renegotiate if you want to get these tax credits for jobs created in Wisconsin, because right now you are in violation.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says not much change is needed to the Foxconn contract, and he says the Evers administration shouldn't be getting caught up in, whether it's Gen 10 or Gen 6. Here's what he told WPR.
So I hope they weren't attempting to negotiate a different contract by using some kind of a loophole as to what product they're making, because we shouldn't care. So I'm going to take him at his word that, look, this is just a minor squabble. You know, if we have to do a technical amendment that says, look, they can make anything at the plant, we don't care what they make, that's no big deal to me. But if they want to renegotiate the entire deal to try to drive a wedge between the state and Foxconn, that would certainly be unfortunate. But I don't think that's their goal.
So is Speaker Voss's sentiment toward Foxconn a more hands-off approach? Is that widely shared among lawmakers?
It's very hands-off. And I mean, I can tell you in a separate interview, Senator Scott Fitzgerald said largely the same things. He doesn't care what they build, basically. I would say that if the leaders of the Assembly and the Senate are indicative of where their majority caucuses are at, then, yeah, that's kind of the point of view. The counter to that is that the Foxconn deal was reached under very specific terms, that this was pitched as kind of a revolutionary, groundbreaking industry, and that's why Foxconn was going to get all of this money. And so that's why it's kind of specific in the contract. But Foxconn is, we should mention, building a large plant in Wisconsin, about 1 million square feet, not the 22 million that was originally envisioned. So they are they do have a presence here.
There is a footprint.
Jobs. Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah.
It's just a lot different than was pitched.
Last week we heard that they're having trouble recruiting employees to come to Wisconsin. What do you make of that?
Yeah, this was something that they mentioned Foxconn did in a letter to the state. There's been kind of a back and forth of letters between Foxconn and the state, either through the Evers administration or the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. And it was kind of a line in that letter where they said, these economic trends have made it hard for us to hit these goals. You do hear that from other companies, that because we have low unemployment, finding workers to, to fill jobs is more challenging. But to say that we know everything about what's going on to Foxconn's decisions, a global company like that, whose plans are changing, we just don't.
We're getting up to speed on state capital developments with WPR's Capital Bureau Chief Sean Johnson. How do you feel about purging voter rolls? Are you a voter who's recently moved? What do you think about the voter registration process? Join in 800-642-1234. State Cap continues with Sean Johnson in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're taking stock of the year in politics, what discussions are poised for 2020. WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson recently had a wide-ranging conversation with Governor Evers. His colleague, Laurel White, sat down in the same vein with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. Republicans rolled out a number of mental health-related bills this fall. What do you think is a solution to gun violence? How do you think about recent policy efforts to steer more funding toward mental health programs? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And Sean Johnson stays with us. So, Sean, your colleague Laurel talked with Assembly Speaker Voss about mental health funding as a means to curb gun violence. And Voss said throwing more money at the problem is not the solution. Where does he stand with mental health policy and where money should be directed?
Yeah, this caught our attention because while there's not a, you know, a mental health bill out there that is, you know, net specific to address school violence, is not something that's, you know, had a public hearing or something like that. There has been talk by Democrats and Republicans about that being a possible response to some of the incidents of school violence in Wisconsin this year. You know, we've seen where the parties are at when it comes to other bills, like a bill that would require, you know, criminal background checks for firearm purchases or a red flag law. Republicans have, you know, made it pretty clear they're not going to support that. Democrats have said that, you know, like, look, we support these. The public supports these.
That was where the gavel in, gavel out occurred.
That's right. The special session that Governor Evers called. So, you know, they're far apart on that. It seemed like they might be closer together on doing something with mental health. And so this from Speaker Voss would seem to suggest that's not going to happen by the end of session. His full quote was, "We have already done a lot on mental health. I think there's a lot of things that play into what's happening. It isn't as simple as snapping our fingers and putting more money into a problem." So there's only, you know, maybe a couple months left of the legislative session before they go back to their districts to campaign. And this doesn't seem like it's got a great chance of passing when you see comments like that.
Speaker Voss said Republicans will, though, roll out at least one gun-related proposal next year. Do we have any insight as to what that would be?
He just said that the bill will make changes to penalties on individuals who commit a crime with a weapon to make sure they are, quote, appropriately punished. You know, we just don't know what that is. He mentioned it in an interview, and that's basically all we have right now.
Talking with Sean Johnson, WPR's State Capitol Bureau Chief, and we're going to be talking about voter rolls here in a moment. How do you feel about the voter roll debate? Are you a voter who's recently moved? What do you think about voter registration processes? Join in 800-642-1234. So, Sean, a Wisconsin judge recently ruled that the 234,000 voters should be removed from voter rolls because they've moved. And this due to a lawsuit filed by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. What is the status of the suit?
The status is that it is being appealed. So you had this initial ruling in Ozaukee County Circuit Court Friday before last. And it is now being appealed to a state court of appeals. And the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, the conservative think tank that brought the initial lawsuit, is asking the state Supreme Court to take it up immediately, to basically bypass the appeals court. And, you know, it's going to end up there anyway. And that's a great venue for the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, because conservatives have a 5-2 majority on the state Supreme Court and have seen eye to eye with, you know, the Institute on a number of issues. So that's kind of where things stand. The state hasn't taken any action yet in response to the judge's order. The case is being appealed in state court. There has also been a kind of a counter lawsuit filed in federal court by the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. They want to get involved in this case. They want to block that state court ruling. They were not allowed to get involved at the state level. And so they're asking a federal court to get involved and take over this case.
Sounds like Attorney General Josh Call also filed an appeal in state court.
Yeah, so that's the appeal that's in the state court of appeals.
Okay.
Call is representing the Wisconsin Elections Commission. You know, he's the lawyer for the state in this case. And you know, there have been situations where an attorney general and the Elections Commission are kind of don't see eye to eye, and the Elections Commission has to get its own attorney. That's not the case here. Call and the Elections Commission are on the same page, and so he's fighting their fight in state court. If it does go up to the state Supreme Court, and you know, you presume it will, that would you'd have a situation where Call and his DOJ would be defending the Elections Commission, and their position is that these names should not be immediately removed from the rolls. This is the position they took earlier this year. What they want to do, these are names that were flagged by a multi-state government database that uses government records as having potentially moved. So the state sent out letters to 230,000 plus of these people. Under the judge's ruling in circuit court, if those people didn't respond and say, like, hang on, I still live here, or if they didn't re-register, basically if they didn't take some kind of action, they would be immediately removed from the rolls. What the Elections Commission had planned on doing was giving them until 2021 before they were immediately removed, because the Elections Commission has had some issues with this system when it used it a couple years ago, where there was an election, people's names were taken off, they came in to vote and said, hey, no, I'm actually still at that address, you made a mistake. So they're trying to avoid that.
How have lawmakers responded to this voter roll situation?
What we've heard from Republican leaders is that this is, I think they think it's kind of much ado about nothing. At least Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, his point is that because you can register same day in Wisconsin, it's not like people wouldn't have a chance to vote. The Democratic counter to that is you're introducing confusion into the process here. Governor Tony Evers said, I don't want to kick anybody off the rolls, but, I'm specifically concerned about these people, because if you look at the people who are likely to be included on this list, they are from cities that tend to vote Democratic. And so it could disproportionately hurt Democrats in an election where, in Wisconsin, they are all close, and there's no indication that this election will be any different. And there's a lot riding on it, obviously, with the presidential election in Wisconsin being such a swing state.
Well, let's touch on here homelessness funding for a moment. Governor Evers called on the Joint Finance Committee to meet last week regarding this funding, but the meeting never happened. What is going on here with this funding source for homelessness?
What's ultimately going on is that you have some resistance among Republican state senators to this homelessness funding, which amounts to about $3.7 million per year in homelessness, grants for homeless shelters, things like that. We don't know exactly what the Republican senators' concerns are and who exactly they are, but we know that this is something that has support in the state assembly. It's something that was put into the budget, but it has basically stalled there. So the funding that was in the budget needs the Finance Committee's final okay to be released. And, the committee has a big Republican majority there, and the Republican contingent did not meet in this special session, basically, of the Finance Committee that Governor Evers called last week. He took a rare step of ordering the committee to meet. Democrats showed up. All the staff that works at the Finance Committee showed up. Republicans did not show up. So it was, it's just kind of another example of a governor can only do so much when you have divided government. Republicans are saying, that's not going to help matters. You need to talk to Republican senators to get this done. The governor's saying, hey, I'm trying everything I can here.
What would this funding particularly do? Are there things that are hamstrung because this funding isn't happening?
It is funding the idea came from a council on homelessness that was formed under former Republican Governor Scott Walker and Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish. And it was an issue that they wanted to address. Mm-hmm. And this is, it's basically grants for, it would go directly to communities for, shelters, things like that. So kind of direct payments to that. It's not exactly like it wouldn't get caught up in a state government agency so much as it would be directly paid out.
Before we wrap up here, are there rumblings at all of a potential property tax cut?
This is something that Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald brought up in his year-end press conference last week. Yeah, so he said he's hearing back in his district, people are concerned with property tax increases. This is something that was allowed in the most recent budget that was, you know, that passed the legislature, was signed by the governor. It gave local governments, schools in particular, more leeway to increase local property taxes to, you know, pay for services, pay for schools. And they've taken that. And so you're seeing a larger increase than you have since 2009. Fitzgerald's saying that we want to address that, and they've got a couple months left to do it. We'll see what that means. It could mean spending state money to drive down local property taxes, but, you know, that's yet to be determined.
Sean, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Sean Johnson is WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief. He co-hosts the WPR Politics podcast. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Democratic State Representative Kalen Haywood of Milwaukee, who's wrapping up his first year in office. You can join in 800-642-1234. Back for more State Cap after this news update on the Ideas Network. We're talking about light trespass here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Streetlights, car lights, home and garden lights, illuminated billboards, all are prone to giving off this unwanted light that's not shining in the right direction or at the right intensity. And a study in the journal Science Advances found that basically all Americans live with light pollution. 4 out of 5 people on Earth live with the problem of artificial light taking over the darkness. Have you had to deal with a neighbor's light encroaching on your property? What did you do about the situation? Do you think streetlights or other outdoor lighting is too bright, or do you appreciate bright outdoor lights? Join in at 800-642-1234. Don Sanford is an outdoor lighting consultant. He worked at Wisconsin Public Television for 30 years, where he was a volunteer manager and production manager working on lighting and location. Don, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. How are you today?
Doing well. So help us understand, what is light trespass?
Light trespass is when light that is intended for lighting one area spills over and goes someplace else that it's not intended to go.
All right. So if you have a street light right outside your bedroom window, speaking from experience in my past house, shining right into your infant's bedroom, there's an issue there. That is light trespass.
That's right. And it's an unintended consequence, I guess, is the best way to describe it. And it's very much akin to going into your living room and just taking all the lampshades off. The light isn't any brighter. It's just going the wrong way. Instead of being focused down, it's now going helter-skelter.
How does light trespass contribute to overall light pollution?
That's where light pollution comes from. Because instead of having light focused at a subject, at a parking lot, at a front porch, at an architectural feature, planting on the outside of your house. Instead of being focused at that, it's instead let go to release to travel straight up. And that's what people typically think of as light pollution, is that light is going up into the sky. And, you know, the Martians already know we're here. We don't have to send them signals. You know, they already know we're here. So it's just wasteful. It's just plain waste. It's annoying, and it's wasteful to send light up into the sky.
Don, do you think light trespass is worse than it used to be? Is it getting better, worse, stabilizing?
I'd say it's stabilizing. I think people are more aware of the problem, and I think manufacturers are starting to market fixtures that control this light trespass, and one of the things there are two things that I think are important here. It's not the brightness; it's it doesn't matter. You can put a lower light bulb in a bad fixture, and it's still going to be bad. And it's not the source. You can think you're doing a great thing for the environment by buying an LED fixture, throwing out your old incandescent fixtures and buying an LED fixture. If the fixture is improperly designed, it's still bad. You know, you're still not doing anybody any favors. You're just spending less money and still doing something bad.
So you really not only have to think about illumination and about what kind of light you put in and screw in, but you really have to think about the actual fixture itself.
That's right, because if you can see, one of the ways to know if you're creating light pollution or light trespass is walk across the street, walk over into your neighbor's yard, or if you live on a lake, go half a mile out into the lake and look at your house. And if you can see the light source or the source of the light, not the effect of the light, which is, you know, the light hitting the ground, but if you can actually see the light, then you've got light trespass. You're a trespasser.
We're talking about the impact of what is called trespass light. Don Sanford is an outdoor lighting consultant. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you taken steps to make sure your outdoor lighting isn't bothering your neighbors or perhaps bothering wildlife? What tips do you have to make sure your lighting isn't too bright? What questions do you have about how to make sure you're not contributing to light trespass or light pollution? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Joe now, joining us from Neenah. Hi, Joe.
Hello. I absolutely agree with the point being raised here. I live on a lake, and I live in the city, and there are people who buy sodium vapor lights who think they have to be eternally secure. They're afraid of anything coming on their property. But what they fail to realize is that there are side shields. There are devices that direct light downward on your property, and all you'll see on the lake is the glow of someone's property, but it will not spill into the sky. I suggest they go to the website of the IDA, International Dark Sky Association, and they'll learn what kind of devices can be purchased. But I do not appreciate a neighbor who puts in LED lighting and fails to put in side shields. Right now in the city, I do have neighbors like that. And you just see such a bright light, and there's no need for it. You can light your property with the proper lighting fixture, as was pointed out.
Joe, thanks so much for the call. Don, what about side shields? What do
they
do?
They are most commercial fixtures come with side shields as an option. For whatever reason, the most common fixture that are put up on commercial buildings are things called wall packs. And that's a fixture that is attached to the outside of a building. It looks like a glass box. And the proper wall packs have a metal cover that come right down to the bottom of that fixture so that the light is forced to go straight down. But that's an option, and a lot of times the installer or the architect, whoever specified that fixture, misses that option, and you create a light bomb instead of a beautiful lighting on the outside of a building. The other place where you often see these issues is we call them bollard lights. They're these posts that are maybe about waist high, and they have a opening at the top with sometimes some louvers. But the louvers are not always installed, or they're installed improperly. Instead of the light being forced down onto the pathway, it goes out horizontally. And those things are conveniently, I say sort of with a wink-wink, they're at a convenient height. So if you're in your car and you're driving by, they're exactly at eye level for a driver. And you drive by one of these poorly installed fixtures, and bang, you get hit right in the eye. And when you get a bright light shining into your eyes like that, you're temporarily blinded. Very hard to see.
Let's go to Jenny now, joining us from Germantown. Hi, Jenny.
Hello. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. What's on your mind about light trespass?
I have a neighbor who has a security light that goes on and off with motion detection outside my bedroom window. If a rabbit runs across the street a mile down the road, that light goes on, unfortunately.
Oh, dear.
I counted 43 times one night before I got so frustrated that I just stopped counting. It wakes me up all night long, and I do not want to have to resort to light-blocking shades because I like to wake up to the sun in the morning. So is there any legal recourse for me with this?
Don, what are regulations that, what are the, you know, are there regulations to for light pollution?
Yes. Yeah, in most municipalities, there are regulations about light trespass. And, but they're, sometimes they're hard to find. Talking to a neighbor who has a bad light is like telling somebody that they've got bad breath. It's one of the most uncomfortable things you can do. And so you turn to a building inspector because, you know, that's what these people do. And I looked at several lighting codes. I mean, here in Madison, our the ordinances about light trespass are tucked into the zoning code. And the way you can find those sometimes is if you just go to your municipality's website and find the code of ordinances and do a search in there under lighting, and it'll be tucked in there. And there are measurements. The way that this is determined is that an inspector will come out with a special light meter and will stand at the property line, and there are measurements, foot candle measurements, that will indicate how much light can come across the property line. And usually it's in the order of one or maybe three foot candles, which isn't a lot. Or sometimes the ordinance will be written to say that you shouldn't be able to see the source or its reflection from the other side of the property line.
So you're saying that they'll actually take measurements to see exactly how much light is spilling over?
Right. There are measurements, and there are building codes, just like there are codes for everything else about sidewalks and the construction of a building and the way the parking lot is marked. There are codes and there are ordinances that are written to detail and describe what light trespass is and how much is allowed.
Outdoor lighting consultant Don Sanford is our guide as we talk about light trespass. Have you ever been out in nature with no artificial lighting at all? What was it like for you to see the night sky in the absence of any light pollution? Did seeing a part of the world without any light pollution change your thoughts on how much outdoor lighting we need? Join in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us WPR Mornings. We'll be back to this in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Our world is lit by electricity, and there are some words to describe different light pollution. There's over-illumination, light clutter, sky glow, light trespass. We're talking about light trespass here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Unwanted light creeps onto someone else's property or into another person's window, so you may have a light on your back patio illuminating your backyard. If some of that light creeps over the fence, shines into your neighbor's living room through a window, your backyard light is trespassing on your neighbor. Have you had to deal with a neighbor's lights encroaching on your property? What did you do about the situation? Do you think street lights and other outdoor lighting tends to be too bright or not powerful enough? Does outdoor lighting make you feel safe? Join in at 800-642-1234. Outdoor lighting consultant Don Sanford stays with us. Don, we had an email from Emmanuel in Strawberry Point, Iowa, and he said, my city went from mercury vapor to sodium vapor to LED. And he said, I'm glad we are back to blue from the orange of sodium vapor. Each change resulted in reduced electricity use. Can you help us understand which of these, what's going on here with these different types of light?
Well, the LED light, of course, is the most modern advanced light source and uses far less electricity than anything else that was been there before, and using less electricity is one thing, but it's all about the fixture design, and because an LED fixture is designed to put out the same amount of the same number of lumens, the same brightness as a sodium fixture or a mercury vapor. They're designed to put out that same level, deliver the same amount of light onto the street, for instance, but it's in the fixture design.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's so critical. I've been in towns where they remodeled their downtown lighting and put in these wonderful fixtures that used I think they were sodium vapor, I can't think what the source was, but anyway, it was an improvement for them. But the fixtures are so poorly designed that they created all this glare, and the glare is the term when light shines in your eyes or in your bedroom or goes someplace or it goes up. It's where it's not supposed to go. That's glare, and that it doesn't matter what the light source is. Glare is bad. And the thing is that you know this intuitively when you're walking down the street or driving down the road. You know it when a light shines in your eye. Holy cow! Look at that light just shined right. That's glare, and that's not good lighting.
Let's go to Doug now, joining us from Loganville. Hi, Doug.
Hi there. I just want to make a comment. When I was much younger, growing up on the farm. So I'm one of a really, really big hill in Sauk County. And if you went out on a clear night, you could see the stars like you'd never seen before. And it was amazing. So much so when I got a little bit older and got married, I took my wife out to the same spot on a nice clear night to show her the stars. But, you know, there's a glow from the towns all around in every direction. You can just count Reedsburg or Loganville or... anyway, those had gotten much brighter over time.
Doug, thanks so much for the call. And it's, you know, Doug can reach back to his childhood and remember much darker skies. Mm-hmm. Is it light trespass to blame?
Yes, definitely. And another way to think about this is the next time you're flying, you know, you jump in an airplane, you fly across the country, and you fly over a city at night sometime, and you look out the window, and a light is shining up at you. Well, that doesn't make any sense at all. Why is somebody paying good money to send a light 10,000 feet up in the air?
Right,
you know,
yeah.
And that light contributes to sky glow because the light source, it's uncontrolled, goes up and reflects off the moisture in the air, and that's what creates this sky glow that we see.
You're out on the lakes a lot. What does it look like from your vantage point from, say, Lake Monona or Mendota as you look back to shore?
I took someone out on a boat ride one night trying to explain light trespass to them. And it was a hard sell, didn't quite get it until we were coming up to her dock. And she lived in an area up on the north side of Lake Mendota where it's pretty dark. And her husband heard us coming in the motorboat and flipped on the yard lights. And instantly we were blinded. I mean, by then we'd been out in the lake for maybe an hour and our eyes had gotten used to this darkness. And he, thinking he was doing a good turn, turned on the lights on the outside of the house. Boom. All of a sudden we were bathed in light. We were like deer in headlights. And she looks at me and says, "I understand now."
You have this background in theater, TV lighting. How did the issue of light pollution come to your attention, and why did you decide to pursue this?
Well, in theatrical and television lighting, if you want to see something, if you want the audience or the viewers to see something in a scene, you point a light at it. And if you don't want them to see something, you trim the light off so it's only lighting that. And in a theater, we're trying to send light from a lighting fixture that's 20 feet away down onto the stage or onto the set. And so controlling the direction of light is critical in that line of work. And a friend of mine, David Liebel from UW Extension at the time, was working on a project, and somehow we got together. I can't remember, but he said, "I'm trying to understand this," and so we somehow connected, and it was I discovered that at that time that outdoor lighting is just like all the other work that I have been doing during my career, except it was a whole new stage, a whole new venue.
So if you're feeling like you're a trespasser, is it possible to modify the lighting you already have instead of buying new fixtures or new lights?
Yes. Yeah. It's in some cases it's easy. Sometimes, you know, I've helped people modify existing fixtures with sometimes we've used a little bit of aluminum, especially the aluminum roof flashing works well. I mean, you want to turn the fixture off. And, you know, you want to be careful. You don't want to start running screws into a light fixture that might be energized. But you can add shading to it. You can't really paint out the lens on fixtures. Paint on glass just doesn't work very well. And sometimes it's just a matter. We retrofitted a parking ramp. We helped the owner retrofit a parking lamp that was creating incredible light trespass onto Lake Wingra. And all it required, I mean, there were maybe 25 light fixtures in this parking ramp, 30. And all it required was two guys, a stepladder, and a couple of wrenches. And they just adjusted these fixtures. And in the matter of an afternoon, the problem was solved. It was just... So sometimes the solutions to this are really simple and don't require a huge capital outlay to make everything better.
Don, as we wrap up here, what would you tell city leaders as they look to replace street lights, street lamps, and how they're installed in neighborhoods?
You want to make sure that all the fixtures that you install are full cutoff. And their descriptions of, if you just Googled full cutoff lighting, or another booklet that was published by Extension called Sensible Shoreland Lighting. If you Google either one of those subjects or you visit the International Dark Sky Association's website, you'll find model ordinances, you'll find samples, drawings, photographs of good lights and bad lights, full cutoff fixtures, and that will really help you as a person struggling with this. It'll help you understand that you're not alone, that this really is a problem. It's just not, and there is a solution.
Don, thank you for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me, Kate.
Don Sanford is an outdoor lighting consultant, worked at WPT for 30 years, where he was a volunteer manager, production manager, working on lighting and location. Coming up, it's news that a Dane County family recently won a multimillion-dollar settlement from the state's Medical Malpractice Insurance Fund. We'll discuss the case and the law that limits medical malpractice awards here in Wisconsin. Stay with us. News is next on the Ideas Network.